Support the Bartholomew Town Podcast by subscribing, rating, and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. My guest today is Cassim Yarn, Rhode Island's first Director of Veteran Affairs. In his role as director, Cassim oversees several key initiatives, such as Rhode Island's Veterans Resource Center, the Rhode Island Veterans Home, and the Rhode Island Veterans Memorial Cemetery, serving as a connector between the state and Rhode Island's 61,000-plus veterans. But his broader impact as a publicly visible member of the Raimondo administration's cabinet, from his hands-on work with homeless veterans to sporting hilarious costumes at state functions, also caught my attention and serves as a portal into some of the specific work being conducted within the current administration. With seemingly ubiquitous admiration and a highly respectable ground game, I was curious about Cassim's background and how it informs his approach to serving Rhode Island's veterans and their families, as well as his overall role as a cabinet member. Hey, Instagrammers, be sure to follow us at Bartholomew Town Podcast. We keep the conversation going between episodes with exclusive content. Plus, I post pretty much everything I do in print, radio, or otherwise there in the stories. Coverage from live events, including our very own Elmwood Songwriters Club, which this past weekend happened right here at our loft in Providence. We bring you to the events that you're not going to. Instagram at Bartholomew Town Podcast. All right, without further ado, my sit-down conversation with Rhode Island Director of Veterans Affairs, Cassim Yarn.
I grew up in Jackson, Mississippi. You know, it's kind of symbolic as we approach MLK Day on the weekend and being reflected, being African-American male, sense of responsibility, sense of duty. But in order to be cognizant, to plot out a course for the future, we got to be cognizant of the past. And growing up from Mississippi, a lot of Dr. King's words echoes today in terms of a person being judged by the content of the character, not by the color, by the gender. And that means something. Growing up from Mississippi, who has a historical past in terms of almost every speech that Dr. King talked about, he used Mississippi as a major talking point, and not a good way. So early on in my life, I realized, hey, I'm an adult. I'm going to be an adult, and I needed to be, what else is there in the world that's going on? Is the Mississippi going to define who I am long term? So I joined the Navy. I got my diploma that night at 6 o'clock. At 06 in the morning the next day, I was on a plane leaving Mississippi. And I was part of an organization, Great Lakes, Illinois. I remember I could probably walk through that entire experience like it was yesterday. Because it was just that profound shift from adolescent to young adulthood, a strong sense of purpose, being some part of something that's bigger than yourself, the needs of no one individual. And when there, I looked at all walks of life. You know, we didn't see color. We didn't see gender. We saw service members want to honor and serve this country. And those are the virtues as a 18-year-old, now I'm 46, that are used as building blocks to help educate and guide our Rhode Island youth. So I graduated boot camp, and I chose a place. I went back to Mississippi to get my follow-on training to learn my trade, my skill that I was going to be doing my job in the Navy. And I came into another crossroads. Where do I go? Where's my next career stop along the way. I had, and here are my alternatives. Atlanta, Georgia, Hawaii, Chicago, Texas, and Massachusetts. And I was, so I, at that point, I didn't have a clue. I was like, where do I go? Pick a place you've never been before. Well, I kind of knew, this because I'm from Mississippi, so I kind of knew the South in that nature too. Hawaii, knew where it was, you know, geographically, but like, Then there was Chicago, because I have family members from Chicago, so it's like, okay. But then something about Massachusetts. So I chose Massachusetts. And another major ripple on my journey. And I remember like it was yesterday, make my first snow angel. So it's kind of symbolic that we're having this meeting we get prepared as we prepare for a storm coming our way.
Right, totally.
So I remember, like I said, making my first snow angel. And I'm like, you know, it's kind of cool. And the cold weather. But I always say, too, you know, New England has a mentality, oh, we're very cold people, blah, 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 until you get to know us. And, you know, there's some truth to that stereotype, I guess. Right. And but I fell in love, started to fall in love with New England. And I got my undergrad degree at Boston University, home of the Mighty Terriers. I got my diploma and I was driving, I was leaving Boston, I was on Mass Ave heading out, but this was before the Big Dig. And I was just, wow, what a beautiful city. And truly a beautiful city. And I fell in love with, you know, Red Ben, probably remember Red Sox Nation back then. It was painful to be a fan. but you know, we stuck with it. And as I guess that's a message in that as well, by sticking with it. And I went to Newport, started to get my follow-on career. And then I was stationed there, became a surface warfare officer. You know, taking ship deployment all throughout the entire world. Four deployments later, I got stationed back at the War College. And I said, you know, it's time for me to start transitioning because I'm, you know, getting older and, you know, going back out to sea again and holidays won't be the same because at that I'll be a senior officer aboard a ship, and then I'll be required to be there with the crew. You know, again, if they're serving, we're there serving too, regardless of the holidays. And that's honor with that. So I was like, hey, but I'm looking at the side of my family. You know, that's taking the military takes its toll as well. So I was like, you know what? I think it's time for me to retire. And the opportunity presented itself to me to serve in a greater capacity. But, you know, now I look back at it now, essentially 3 years ago, or 4 years ago when the process started, but 3 years ago now, I look at it and, you know, it was the best decision I ever made. And I get to serve a state that's given me so much. My wife's from Rhode Island. Our children were educated in the public school system here in Rhode Island. Our home is in Rhode Island. I don't owe any other homes anywhere else. No desire to live anywhere else. Yes, I do. You know, I do. Like, I love the beach. Being a sailor, sand in the beach, they kind of go hand in hand. But, you know, the thing is about making Rhode Island better. And a part of the Governor Rondo's team that our charge is to make Rhode Island better, that all Rhode Islanders can make it here in Rhode Island. And my little niche is our veterans. Like, for example, our Rhode Island population is a little bit over a million, whereas, you know, in Massachusetts, their veteran population is at 300,000. So per capita, same percentages relative to the number. So when I talk with numbers, it's always relative. So relative to this, relative to the Joneses, here's where we are. And I love the ability to assess where we are too. And I think that's being a good steward for the taxpayer. But also it makes me a realistic leader also because, hey, we're making progress. 3 years ago, we didn't have a state director. Now we do. 3 years ago, we didn't have a new veterans home. Now we do. 3 years ago, we didn't have a cemetery administrator that his priority is to make sure that our family members, that our 34,000 of our men and women and their spouses that call our cemetery their final resting place, a high priority. And so we're making progress, and I'm glad to be part of that team.
Yeah, and your work is in many ways a connector's office. You know, you're really trying to piece things together.
Yes. Well, I'm a part of an overall, you know, Human Health Services Directorate. You know, we're in the people business, and so we're all connected. And the governor said this in her inauguration speech, when we, a small state like ours, that needs to be our strength. So we have the capability of getting the right people in the room. Before we started the interview today, look at the amount of people that you've come here on this podcast. These are all Rhode Islanders, elected officials, publicly serving, but you had the capability of picking up the phone and, hey, Senator Whitehouse, sir, can you come talk to us about what it is, the priorities, because you represent us by and large. So, hey, can you talk to us? We have that capability here in Rhode Island. And so, and we need to use that to our fullest extent. And as I said, the governor sent her inauguration address. But more importantly, we are connectors. And no, there are no two systems that are alike. But hey, we can do a better job at connecting. And so my office tries to connect veterans and the family members to the services that they need based on what their requirements are.
And what are the main operations that you oversee? Obviously, the Veterans Cemetery in Exeter,
right, and everything in between. Yep. And so they are 13 categories. So we define those by 13 categories. So they're from anything from helping out with homelessness to helping out with education to employment, healthcare, full spectrum. And so, but I like to look at it because there are no two veterans that are alike. Same with their family members. I look at it in terms of demographics. For example, our 61,000 of our veteran population, 70% of them are over the age of 55. That's a different dynamic, right? The majority of that group, they don't, you know, email on a frequent basis, check in, you know, apps. When you say to us an app, they think about an appetizer,
right,
from a local restaurant, via an app for your smartphone,
right,
and things like that. And those are the nuances of that. And checking with automation, going to the internet, doing those things, that's not their forte.
Right.
But they love reading newspapers, reading articles, getting together at social gatherings, social events. Whereas the younger generation of that population are uniquely different. A little bit different on priorities. They are well-versed at checking email, using smartphones, using iPhones, Samsung's phone, what have you, to get information at a rapid pace. So my services have got to be full spectrum to take care for our elderly population that aren't reliant on those services, whereas our younger population, to make sure we are leading the tip of the spear and leading edge when it comes to innovation, getting outreach, providing updates, utilizing social media, utilizing our internet, our website, to get information to them in a timely manner and update it continuously.
Right, and it's that transition from the analog age to the digital age. I'm right at the back end of where I had, you know, cassette player or whatever for a few years, and I remember in operating purely on that level, if
right,
you will.
Having to fast forward, to pause, and stuff like that. Remember, save certain songs, you had to save it.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Recording off the radio, whatever it was, all the way. But, and of course, you know, cell phone I remember getting a flip phone in like 2001 or 2 or whatever it was. So now, I mean, this is obviously the most generic evaluation of modern history, but at the same time, it's very practical.
And so as in any company, Fortune 500 company that's successful, the ability for them to go through those transitionary periods and to not be to be a leader in that industry. It's going to take some steps, but you got to be cognizant of what's going on in the environment. And technology is a force multiplier. It can be the ability to get information out and to get people together. And you know, but in Rhode Island, they have that capability. It multiplies that 7 times because we are a small state. We have the capability of getting together. Yes, we do have to drive all the way 20 minutes somewhere.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's easier because we don't, for example, a place like Texas, you can be driving 2 hours and still in the same city.
Right.
So I like to leverage those capabilities on behalf of our veterans and families.
Yeah, that's interesting. Lieutenant Governor McKee, when I first met him, he referred to the 39 cities and towns and how you really can access each one of those. And that's really true. I've been trying to practice that as well. Make sure I am in each town as often as I can be and connecting.
Absolutely.
They're all unique, and you'll get a Situate versus an East Greenwich.
So one of the first things that I did when the governor made the appointment, I visited every municipality in this state. And I met with each. I sat down, got on the administrator's calendar, the managers, the mayors, and the town councils, the city councils, and we just talked. Talked about, introduced myself, told them about my services, my office, and to be your backstop. If a veteran has any questions, comments, concerns, here's my card, and let's build a partnership. The second time I visited those municipalities, I'm doing a town hall. So to which that I let the municipality choose the location because it's essential to what defines them as a municipality. Some, for example, some choose the town hall, some choose the senior center. And so some those that have vibrant senior center, that's a focal point in the community. And it works great for me, too, because that remember when we talked about earlier about how we have 70% of our veteran population over age 55. So they know where the senior centers are at. Yeah, it's 55 a little early, but still, we know, we get the general gist of the importance of senior centers in our municipalities. And so we have town hall meetings. We sit down and talk about stuff, things in the world like legislation, health care. But the beauty of it, I personally pick up the phone. I invite leadership from our Providence VA Medical Center, our benefits office, and the General Assembly members that represent that municipality. Because, like I said, my philosophy is that I'm not on this island by myself. If I think that I'm going to solve these problems by myself, I fail before I even started. But it's different from hearing from me vice hearing from the sea of veterans. And when a General Assembly is there present, listening to their constituents, it adds value. And so that way, when I get a call from a General Assembly member from that said municipality, they know that we're going to take action to serve their veterans. They have legitimate needs and concerns, and our organization is going to take those on and get the help that they need. Are all the answers going to be the right all the time? Absolutely not, because that's not life. But our job is to advise and to give the veterans, here's the black and white, here's a little gray area, here's some recommendations, and then we go from there. But it's up to at the end of the day, we're informing our veterans and their families, giving them an informed decision so they can make those timely choices.
The governor ostensibly introduced a $10 billion budget yesterday, and in her state address talked a lot about mental health. Do you feel like within both the context of the $10 billion and then in the context of mental health, there's going to be enough attention paid to veterans in those two areas?
Well, this has been long overdue. Earlier last year, back in May timeframe, the governor sent out an executive order for tasking her cabinet members to go out into the community to listen, to talk about mental health. And as a 25-year Navy veteran, 6'5", 300-pound guy that says, hey, you can't cry in public.
Yeah.
That's considered weak. Are you soft? Or something's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
That bravado, that machismo associated with that. Well, in reality, that's the wrong approach. And it's okay not to be okay. And we live in a world now that we safe to say, we can come out and say that I have an issue and I need help. But it's up to us as officials, as leaders in any capacity, be a coworker, subordinate, senior, what have you, a Rhode Islander, if you see someone that's struggling, it's up to us to get that help and need it. And I think the governor's budget tries to achieve just that. And the ability for us to provide those services. We've identified there's some potential seams out there, some gaps, and so we are working together to try to close those gaps, to bring us our community together. And we talk about the adult level, but it's still in our youth, to give them a vehicle, a voice to say, I'm not okay, there's some issues, and let's get some help. And we need to provide the resources for them in order to get that help.
Yeah, she'd mentioned that it's tougher to be a kid now these days than it was when I was in high school or when you were in high school.
Oh, yeah, but the technology is a contributing factor. There's studies out there told in terms of the, you know, where those spike in terms of healthcare, and social media plays a role in that, you know, providing healthcare, but a total quality of health, you know, having a stable job, having the ability for education, all of those issues with stress. You know, and those things are multipliers that inhibit someone to being a productive citizen. And so we can start to identify what those barriers are, put resources in place, then it makes it more easier for those to get the help that they need in a timely manner so they can be productive Rhode Islanders.
Do you feel like you have a good working relationship? And I mean, I know I see you on Twitter. You certainly seem to be beloved amongst, you know, the Rhode Island political inside baseball people, if you will.
I look at life that Kasim, you can only control what you can control. What did you do today? I got to be able to look myself in the mirror and say, Kasim, I did my very best.
Yep.
That means, what am I contributing? I'm going to be part of the team or I'm going to be a detractor. and have a positive. My glass is always half full. I grew up poor on wealth, product for the welfare system. Education was number one priority, and work. Now, and there is no, you know, in terms of the socioeconomics, living as a Southern boy in Mississippi. And when I say boy, every person in Mississippi is called a boy in that regard, too. So there is, you know, there are some issues associated around that term in itself in today's world. But I love working public service. I work together. And I'm, my door is always open to help others to do more. So if I see another one of my fellow cabin members that needs some help, my job is to help them, because I hope someday that if I may have issues, that they're going to be there and got my back. Also, that's good governance. We're a small state. There is no such thing as, you know, the governor has been crystal clear about, you know, our children, for example, shouldn't be defined by the area code to which they live in, their education. I mean, that should echo to the heavens, you know, in that regard, too. So but what is Kasim doing to be part of the team, to bring the team together and to be a force multiplier, not a force divider? And that negative energy out there, it's anybody can have that capability. But my job is to be positive. And I'm not saying every day is all peaches and cream. That's not my message here. But my message is this, is that as leaders, we identify problems and we put together solutions together and get buy-in. You got to have buy-in. If you don't have buy-in, we've already failed. But we've got to get for all the stakeholders in the room in order to come up with a collective decision. And I say this all the time. Behind closed doors, we agree to disagree. But when we walk through those doors as taxpayers, as stewards for the taxpayer, we need to have a united front. And that's the military. Well, that's the military ethos and supporting the boss, but more importantly, supporting each other. And like I said, I have no problem with rolling up my sleeves and getting dirty. That means putting on a costume, getting full regalia to do a Christmas tree lighting, or as opposed to standing tall for those that are homeless, those that are impoverished, those that have mental health issues, to be their voice for them as well, and to champion those causes. That's my job.
Do you ever think you'd run for governor?
So when I said to myself, when I first took the position, because this is a key role, but I was having dinner. My wife was, I had got home like 7:30, having dinner, finishing up the news, and my wife was washing dishes. And I said to my, I looked up at her and I said, "Dear, if I ever come home and say to you, I'm running for public office, I want you to come take that frying pan, walk around the counter, and hit me in the back of the head with it."
Yeah.
And so the answer to that question is, I have zero desire to run for any public office in this state or any state in that matter.
Yeah, just keep working in the capacity you are to make an impact.
Absolutely.
Director, thank you so much for your time. Really
thank
appreciate
you, sir.
It. Great to hang out. Look
Absolutely.
Forward to seeing your costumes this year.
Stay tuned on social media.
That's all for this episode. As always, thank you for listening, and we'll talk soon.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.